Yeah, welcome back to In Focus, News Radio KMAN. We're talking Raleigh County Schools and Blue Valley Randolph Schools here this morning with Cliff Williams and Brady Burton, the superintendents at both of the districts. And we're going to get into some legislative matters here of interest to both these guys. And Cliff, why don't we start with you? You want to talk about some issues?
Yeah, there was a new bill that's out there right now. It's both in the Senate and the House. It's House Bill 2526. Which is going to look at state aid as it relates to bond and interest. Both Brady and I passed bonds here, and so important in our area there is Manhattan as well. With this, the House bill, the version would start July 1st, 2020, and would provide some property tax relief. On the Senate side, kind of excited about this one because they amended it and said that if you passed a bond between 2015 to 2020, that you would qualify for state aid. So I know USD 378, we would go from having 0% state aid to 17% state aid. And so just passing that, that would be a big relief for our taxpayers. So pretty excited about that version and hoping that the House will look at that and recognize that difference in there and maybe amend their bill as well. And I think that would be a great thing for our local taxpayers.
You know, it really would. And our bond passed in 2017. At the time, we had no state aid for our bond. So I'm not familiar with that bill, to be real honest, but something I'll be checking on. And if it were passed, it would be retroactive, right, from what you understand. And so it could help with our bond that we passed, going on 4 years ago now. So with some relief in our area, too. Again, we had no state aid at the time. So, you know, if you whatever percent you get, it gives you back that amount of money and saves you that much in taxes. So that would be good.
I know we did some rough figures, and we're looking about 2.5, maybe 3 mils. And
yeah.
So, you know, every little bit adds up.
Absolutely.
What's the name of that bill?
This is Senate Bill 382.
Okay.
The House side is House Bill 2526.
Interesting. Well, anybody would love to see their taxes go down. I know that'd be welcome news. We do have a caller real quick. Let me get to them. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Good morning. Congratulations on the retirement.
Well, thank you.
Also, I have a question for both of you. One will look at it one way, the other look at the other way. But if you think back to ways, I don't recall how long ago, we consolidated the schools and we had a lot of outcry and pain, et cetera. How far off do you think we are from consolidating again? As we all know, these smaller towns and communities are moving to the cities because we have good roads now. And, excuse me, I know that Mr. Burton, you'll think of this in a different way in a few months because you'll be a taxpayer then, not a superintendent, and you'll have another job in a retirement. But how far off do you think that is that this is going to have to be looked at? Because it's going to have to be. The heavy weight of the budget is in salaries. And if we consolidate, we know what happens there. But as people retire, they just won't be replaced. Nobody will be fired or kicked to the curb. They just be replaced. They won't be replaced and consolidate. So let me get both of your opinions, and I know it'll be two different opinions. And thank both of you for what you do. You're a great job.
Well, thank you for your kind comments. I appreciate that, and it's a great question. And I think it's something that we all think about and look at, and many of your points are correct. To answer your question, I don't know. Will one day there be more consolidation? I don't know that answer either. I know back in the early 60s, there were state-mandated consolidation by the state of Kansas. I went to one of those schools that was affected. I went to Council Grove High School, and we brought in several small towns into Council Grove at that time due to consolidation. The towns of Dwight, Alta Vista, Dunlap, Wilsey, all were consolidated with Council Grove, and became Council Grove High School. And, you know, there hasn't been any mandated consolidation since then. My honest answer is probably most districts will not consolidate unless there is mandated consolidation by the state. I don't think we'll probably see that just for a lot of political reasons. But I know in our district, when I came 15 years ago, I was told then that our district probably wouldn't last more than 5 years. And I had a teacher on staff that retired a few years ago that had been there 30 years and said she'd heard that when she came to the district. Our district today, and I'm being completely honest, our district today at Blue Valley is doing the best today, as I sit here, than it has in the 15 years I've been there financially, academically, facilities-wise. We just passed a bond 3 years ago. And so I think it will be quite a while before you see consolidation in our area or Blue Valley going somewhere else.
Well, I'd like to thank you as well, and definitely would echo a lot of words that Brady said there. Just trying to think of a different spin on that. One thing that may drive maybe some more partnerships than consolidation is the availability of staff. Brady and I right now, we share several staff members just because it's difficult to be able to find staff as well as to be able to afford a full-time staff. Like, we use a social worker that we share together. We have a school nurse. We have foreign language as well. I'd probably see more of those partnerships occurring between the districts just with availability of staff. I know we have several retirements that have occurred, and we're just not seeing the numbers that we have in the past applying. We were very fortunate with our elementary positions that we saw more than we have, but we also had three versus just normally having one. And so I think maybe availability of staff might be something that is going to form more partnerships, that some might view that as some type of consolidation, but I would see that occurring more in the future. We think that's better than maybe going to kind of a webinar type format where kids, you know, basically are going to be seeing a teacher on a TV screen and having an aide in there watching them because you're having to share a staff because you just could not find one. I think Brady a couple years ago couldn't find a math teacher and had to work that way, but he needed to do what he needed to do in order to have those classes for his kids in order to graduate. And so I think this year he's able to actually get an actual person in there, which is great for him.
We are, and I think, Cliff, you make some excellent points. You know, I really believe, and the caller has some good, I mean, that's a very good question. I think the thing that will affect small districts probably more than any, although any size district, whether it's Manhattan down to Blue Valley, has trouble finding staff right now. And people are just not going into education like they did 10 years ago, 5 years ago. But I think the thing that will hurt the small districts the quickest and cause some maybe to look at going in with a larger district is just what Cliff is saying, is staffing, being able to staff your district with proper staffing, you know, finding teachers, paras, classified staff to be able to properly give your students the proper education they need to go on after high school. So probably that's my biggest worry, is continuing to be able to find and hire staff members. I know we've had in the past at times for openings only one staff member or only one person who's applied for a job. And that's just not in our district. I mean, that's in larger districts too. So that's something we all face. And the trouble we have in a smaller district is we might only have one math teacher, one English teacher. Or in a bigger district, even like Cliff's, they might have multiple teachers where they can have some staffing options, more options than what we would in a smaller district.
All right. Yeah. Thank you for the call here. Let's see. Brady, you had a legislative
item? Well, a couple quick things. I know the KSB has been looking at, you know, funding's always the big question. in anything, whether it's schools, whether it's here at K-Man, whatever it is, it all comes down to money, it seems like. And the KSB has put out for this 2019 kind of the pie chart where the money is going. And 74% of our budget money goes to direct support for students and teachers. 22% building and grounds would be utility bills, maintenance, fixing of buses, that type of thing, and 4% for administration. And I think people think that, you know, administration is top heavy in some places. You know, maybe it is. I don't know. We have myself and one other administrator in our district. And so I think in some districts that might be true. I can't speak for any other district. But so really, you know, 96% of our budget is, to me, going directly to kids. 4% for administration, and to me, that goes to kids too, because everything I do is for the benefit of kids in our district. So I like to say 100% of our money is going, you know, back into benefiting kids. But some people will argue that point, I think. The other thing is that's out there that's being really looked at right now hard by our legislature is we receive money, which is called at-risk funding. It used to be what still is based on how many kids you have on free and reduced lunches. And that we used to have a little more freedom with how we use that money. It's being restricted more and more each year. I know for next year, they're looking at even cutting out at-risk funding to giving us a list of exact programs that we must use or have to receive at-risk money. So it'll be interesting to see where that heads. I don't know, Cliff, if you have any thoughts on that.
I think the funding in at-risk is critical to every district that's out there right now. I think everyone would say that, hey, we're using that appropriately because it's helping kids. You know, like one that we share was like a social worker. We talked about that earlier when we first started that. We were using at-risk to do that because our kids have so many social-emotional challenges right now. And we needed that different skill set in order to help with the students and make a more of a home connection, you know, trying to control some things that, you know, really kind of outside of our doors. And that's just one example of how we're using that funding to make a big impact. And I can sit here and say this sadly, but I know that that position has helped us prevent some suicides. And that's a hot topic that's out there right now because it's real. And these kids have some challenges, and we need some staff with some special skill set to reach them, make a difference in their life, let them know that they're valued, and hopefully they don't make that life choice.
You know, unfortunately, and I agree 100%, we have some in our legislature that, you know, if what they're looking at with at-risk funding would come about, I don't believe salaries can be used for that anymore. They're looking at more hands-on curriculum, like what are you doing to help kids, you know, hands-on with reading? What are you doing to help kids hands-on with math? What curriculum are you implementing within your district to help these learners that are having more difficulty in these areas? And then that at-risk money would have to be used directly for those programs. So I agree with you, Cliff. I think we're doing a lot of good things with personnel and some of these other areas. I think there's a lot out there that have the final vote that don't think we're using our money wisely.
I think it'd be safe to say, if I can real quick here, is just, you know, to help our voters, we would encourage them to visit with their legislators and say, you know, give the district some autonomy to be able to match where their needs are as it relates. Every district's a little bit different, and trust them that they're there for kids and that the at-risk funding money is a vital lifeline anymore.
All right, very well. We're almost out of time here. I want to give you a quick opportunity to talk about the bond real quick, your update, Cliff.
Yeah, as we get a little bit of green showing up in the grass there, you get a little bit closer to thinking that maybe we're going to actually have that groundbreaking ceremony. I know I have a couple local patrons are always asking me, when are we going to put the shovel in the ground? And that's going to occur here towards the end of May. We're finalizing all our design efforts and our research. Like we've been pulling some cores, otherwise we're literally drilling through the floor, trying to understand why the settling's occurring. That's one thing that we had on there in order to fix that. We're looking at the designs of the new classrooms with the basement, which would be our storm shelter as we're starting to move into spring storm season here. So we'll be getting all those designs finalized and be going out to bids next month. And so we should start seeing some action on campus at the end of May. So we'll be excited to continue to tell the listeners about all the good things going on in that project.
All right. Well, very good. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you guys back here next month, and we'll talk again. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Brandon.
Stay tuned. We'll talk Battle of the Bulge coming up next here on In Focus.